Canucks Central Wednesday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Visit kintec.net. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Of course, it is a Canucks game day. So yes, a chance for you to enjoy this game day special, $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light at Boston Pizza. So yes, the Canucks welcome in, or they are being welcomed into Washington, D.C., the U.S.'s nation's capital, as they are welcoming in a new president, an old president, but who's the new president and all of that. And now, more importantly, you've got a hockey game to play and try to find a way to stop Alexander Ovechkin in the Washington Capitals.
Which, Godspeed in many ways, right?
Well, actually, Ovi and Dylan Strome are getting called out by their head coach right now, not playing so well, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, but right in time for Vancouver for them to show up and play a bit better, right?
Yeah. Ovi's going to do nothing all game and still end up with two goals. That's how it goes.
You can tell that they're in a situation where they have their sights set on winning the East,
mm-hmm.
and the head coach is wanting to make sure that there's no slippage. Like, we're having success, but you're trying to hold guys' feet to the fire still to maintain this high level of performance.
3-1-2 in their last six, and yet still not satisfied the Washington Capitals. All right, let's get into it. A lot to get into with your Vancouver Canucks. It's the Open on Canucks Central.
Welcome to the Open.
That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me.
The Open on Canucks Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And right now, I know there's a lot going on with this Canucks team, Sat, but the more I think about it, it's like, okay, yeah, you've got all this outside noise. You've got trade rumors abound. Pettersson and Miller at the top of the Athletic's latest trade board. So you have all of these things conspiring around the Canucks right now that are certainly making the situation as uncomfortable as possible. And some of that is their own doing. Some of the comments Patrick Alvin made to Ian McIntyre and all of that, I get it. But the bottom line is, you're reaching the halfway point of the season. You've lost, facts only, you've lost more games than you've won to this point. And you were supposed to be a team taking a step towards being a true Stanley Cup contender. Canucks feel nothing of the sort through their first 39 games this season. And I'm really starting to wonder if, like, is there even a pathway back to the Canucks being, like, getting to a playoff situation and being thought of as, I don't know, but legitimate contender, but even a team that, as we talked about at the start of the year, maybe a second-tier contender or somebody who could legitimately be a player in the West.
So why do you think they don't have a path to get there?
Because I've seen nothing to tell me to suggest, even when they were fully healthy or closer to full health, without Demko at the start of the year, and even without Dakota Joshua, like, nothing about what I've seen through the first 39 games suggests that they've got it this year.
That's fair. Like, up until this point, they haven't shown it, right? The question is there a path to get there? I would say yes, there is a path to get there. I think getting healthier is obviously going to be a big part of it, but it's also assuming that whatever you're seeing now is going to maintain for the rest of the season. Is JT Miller and Elias Pettersson's erratic play, is that going to be something that continues for the rest of the year?
Right.
I don't think so. I think that we haven't seen anywhere near the best of this team, and I think it's one of those situations where in the second half, not to say they're going to go on this magical run and or anything, but I can see things turning. And when you look at the amount of one-goal games they've lost now and leads they've lost, and not to say that, you know, they haven't made mistakes and they've hurt themselves, but these things have a way of evening out as well.
Right.
And it's not like the Canucks have been on this great PDO run or anything, right? So I think that there is some positive regression for this group that is in store in the second half. I think that's something that could happen. I think if the play improves for your higher end players, I think that's going to change the discussion. Like, if this team all of a sudden over, let's say, a 20 game stretch wins 16 games, people are going to look at this team a lot differently.
So is there a scenario that plays out sort of the opposite of last year, where they went through the first 50 games of the season like a house on fire and looked like the best team in the National Hockey League, and then slowed down as the year came to a close. By the end of the season and going into the playoffs, you had a few more question marks about what this team really was. Could you see the script being flipped in a similar way to last year, where they started hot, finished a little bit slow? This year, starting slow, finishing hot. Is that something that we could see play out here for the Canucks?
I think it could happen. Now, I'm not saying it will happen. To your point, you have to start putting on tape and putting performances together and stringing them together that are high level, like we saw against Florida, like we saw against Colorado that night. If you do that consistently over a few weeks, it changes the outlook for the team. It changes the way they look, the way they play, and I think how people will look at them in terms of their chances in the playoffs. They're not going to be a tier one contender, but could they get into that same situation they were last year, for instance, right? And not to say that that's the bar you want to get at. You want to get above that. But I think when you look at the second half as well, there's a lot of hockey to be played yet.
Right.
And the Canucks, to your point, can you get to a situation where you're playing your best hockey down the stretch? And because the Canucks haven't free-falled down the standings, they're not so far behind everybody that, you know, they don't have a chance of closing strong. Like, they have 45 points in 39 games. Right now, the Canucks would have to lose six games in a row to get to 500.
Yeah.
Lose six in a row. Hopefully that doesn't happen, especially with guys getting healthier. Pettersson hopefully back soon. Hronek, some good news, which we'll talk about. If these guys get back and healthy, I think there is a real good chance we're going to see them play at a higher winning percentage. And if you win games, it goes back to what the guys have been saying. Demko, Miller, Pettersson, Hughes, even Tocchet. If we win games, the noise is going to quiet down. I think there's a motivational factor there. And if you get healthy, I do think we're going to at least see the best version of this team. Now, the best version of this team, Reach, may not be good enough to do anything, but I don't think we've seen the best version of them yet.
Well, the problem I'm finding myself here, and you know, you're watching Minnesota right now. You know, they lose Brock Faber early in last night's game. They haven't had Kaprizov. They've been missing arguably as many key players as the Canucks have been missing so far this year, and they're 26-11-4 because they don't get away from their identity. They still play to who they are as a team and find ways to win hockey games that way. And so while, yeah, I do sympathize with the Canucks, and I'm not sitting here and saying, like, I want you to be blasting teams when you don't have Pettersson and Hughes in the lineup as they have had to deal with recently until Hughes came back in the last game and maybe Pettersson tonight. But they've had leads in games and they throw them away. Mm-hmm. They don't play the same defensively stout, smart hockey that they played a year ago. And I know they changed quite a bit of the roster, like a third of the roster over the course of the offseason, but you can't tell me that a lot of these guys can't figure out how to get back to what they did last year. Where's the Carson Soucy we saw last year? Noah Juulsen was a player that played over 50 games and a lot of nights. You know, he was comfortable in the slot that he played in with the Vancouver Canucks. It's not like Nikita Zadorov played like a house on fire during the course of the season last year. He was only trusted to play about 17 minutes a night when he came over from the Calgary Flames in the regular season. That role increased in the playoffs, but I'm just talking regular season here. And the Canucks showed us who they were going into the playoffs, a team that was going to be very hard to play against, very hard to break down. And I figured at some point, by the halfway point of the season, I would have seen enough of that by now. I would have seen that consistently by now. And I don't see the team playing with the type of defensive solidity that they showed last year for pretty much the entire season under Rick Tocchet.
Absolutely. And even when Hughes and Hronek were here, there were some questions to that. However, not having Hronek these past 18, 19 games, it'll be over 20 when he does come back. The Canucks blue line last season was remarkably healthy. Carson Soucy missed half the season, but outside of that, like, everybody else was healthy. It was like one game here, one game there, maybe. They were so healthy down the stretch. They were sitting guys and rotating guys because Noah Juulsen was playing so well, they felt he deserved to play, and they load managed.
Ian Cole was getting maintenance days.
Even Zadorov got a maintenance day, right? And so that's how healthy they were last season on the blue line. That, I think, is going to play a big part to your defensive solidarity. I mean, right? Solidity. And the question is their blue line good enough? And if this organization doesn't address the blue line by the deadline, because we saw there isn't depth, like real credible depth, when one of your top two guys go down or both go down, which was like the worst case scenario, which we saw when Hughes was also missing with Filip Hronek. They don't have another guy to step up and hold the blue line, right? They have nobody else to lead the blue line. It was Myers by default.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be in that situation again. So the ceiling of this team is directly going to be linked to, obviously, Pettersson, obviously, JT Miller. But can they find one more player on the blue line? You saw the difference Zadorov made to the team last year when they got him.
Yeah. It's, you know, if I see Miller string together a couple more games like he did the other night, like, okay, now we're moving in a good direction. Because you need to see the star players playing better. Pettersson, same thing, whether he goes tonight or not, whenever it starts to happen, like, yeah, it's almost a year now since we saw Pettersson play at the elite level he should be playing at, the elite level that earned him that $11.6 million a year contract. So I haven't completely lost faith that player's never going to return, but it needs to happen pretty quick once he gets back from injury to feel that there is... Like, my confidence is shook in this team as far as what they could potentially be through the second half of the season and going into the playoffs. Even if they end up making it in a pretty weak bottom half of the Western Conference, like, that's not going to tell me much. I want to feel like they can truly be a team that might cause some of, you know, whether it's Edmonton or Vegas, a real issue if you end up in a playoff series against one of those teams.
I mean, I would say, like, once you get to the playoffs, you know, everything changes.
Yeah.
Once you get to the postseason, it's a different animal. And part of this year is very much getting yourself there. And not to say that you flip a switch and all of a sudden you become a contender, but things change in the postseason. The game is different. And maybe there is a renewed sense for everybody going in that, hey, forget the regular season. Let's just focus on what we can do when we're here. Because a lot of the issues the Canucks have had reach, and we talk about needing more help, but it's a lot of correctable things.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not sitting here saying it's this massive talent discrepancy night in and night out. Yeah, they've had it with the injuries on the back end, for sure. But if you look at the mistakes they've made, you look at how they've played and their top players not being at their best.
But they don't play with composure anymore. You know, it's like one thing goes wrong and then the avalanche starts coming down on them.
But isn't that what happens when you lose confidence? Isn't that what happens when you're the league leader and blown leads in the third period all of a sudden? Like, isn't that what happens? You lose confidence and, you know, the guys were talking, like, I thought Demko, you know,
like a self-fulfilling prophecy all of a sudden.
Yeah, and we've seen this in sports. Like, it's a story as old as time, right? Yeah. Confident. You look at Man City in soccer, for instance. This is a team that won four straight titles, and they were falling over themselves and and almost scoring own goals like a bunch of idiots earlier this season. Yeah. Now they're trying to figure it out again, right? But it happens to the best of teams, and the Canucks certainly aren't the best of teams because they've had only one year where they're a playoff team last year. They're trying to find it again, and it's been disappointing. They haven't been good enough so far this year, absolutely. But the season is long enough that, going back to the start of this conversation, is there a path for them to change their fate as a year goes on? I believe there is a path. It's up to them to walk that path, though.
Yeah, I need to see more. I think we all do. I think it's pretty obvious. Thank you, Captain Obvious, Dan Riccio. But it's been frustrating to see, and you're wondering, because you know there's more talent on this team than what we've seen to this point of the season, and... Again, it's the defensive side of the puck that's probably been most worrisome. Like, given the absences, I expect them to struggle to generate a ton of offense right now. But the uncharacteristic mistakes, while uncharacteristic from last year, they've been pretty in line with what we've seen this team put on paper this year. That's been the most frustrating part lately.
Yeah, and I think those are the ones we talk about, just shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah.
And again, like, if you have Hughes playing in, you know, a couple of those games, and he was on the ice for the loss against Montreal. But does it happen if you have Hughes and Hronek? Do you blow to 3-goal lead against, you know, Seattle?
No,
right?
Probably not.
Right. And I think those are the things too to keep in mind, that if you're missing your top two guys, of course you have.
But
no,
that
chance.
Can't be the excuse.
No, but you
like,
can't.
Minnesota
but you have
had
no
Jonas
chance.
Brodin playing over 30 minutes last night.
100%.
You know?
But I'm saying you have no chance.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have both those guys playing, you have no chance. And yeah, Jonas Brodin, but at least you have your Brodin. Who's Vancouver's Brodin?
Okay.
I wish the Canucks had
touché,
a Brodin.
Touché. Fair point.
It's like Tyler Myers, right? We're here having Eric Brandstrom wars. The guy who's been on the ice for one goal in his last like 12 games or whatever it is. It's like, you got to put this guy on the ice.
We'll see how they fix it going forward. You can answer that on 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. If you are listening live, we appreciate hearing from you. Text in on the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you, or online at dunbarlumber.com. Canucks.com. Into the Canucks Central Roundup, mentioning Philip Peronic. He is on a conditioning stint in Abbotsford, Patrick Alvin announced today. Wasn't expecting this on my Canucks News bingo card today, so I was a little bit surprised. I know he'd been skating. I know Rick Tocchet has really praised Peronic for how hard he's worked to get back and really get close to coming back from injury. But a conditioning stint in Abbotsford, this is not something we see every day of the week.
No, it's not, right? And I think it's something that people have been clamoring for this team to utilize with other players, Thatcher Demko and even Dakota Joshua. The goalie one, I understand the environment's a bit different, right? But Dakota Joshua, the player, however, has to agree to a conditioning assignment, and I think those things come into it as well. I wonder how much of this is also finding ice and going somewhere to skate the next 6-7 days too, because the Canucks are on the road and he's trying to gear up a little bit here. So I don't know if it means he's imminently going to play or if he's going to dress up in Abbotsford. I would imagine the practice time there and getting into that type of situation and the reps there is probably the most valuable thing for Philip Peronic right now. So he could still be a couple weeks away. Like, I don't think this means as soon as the Canucks are back next week, Peronic's back into the lineup.
Canucks do have a pretty heavy schedule while they're on the road. Of course, this is the norm in the National Hockey League. They'll play in Washington today. Then they've got the Carolina Hurricanes on Friday, in Toronto on Saturday, and over to Winnipeg come next Tuesday to close out this 5-game road swing. So a bit of a tough schedule, but not a lot of practice time expected in this run over the next week. Kevin Lankinen starts tonight. Thatcher Demko is close, according to Rick Tocchet, which may suggest that Demko could play one of the two back-to-backs on the weekend, but it is Kevin Lankinen for now. We'll talk to Kevin Woodley a little bit later on in the program. Elias Pettersson and Derek Forbert considered game time decisions. I guess the Canucks would have to make a roster move for Pettersson to play tonight. So we might know
pretty
earlier
soon.
Or pretty soon should Pettersson be in the game tonight, because they would have to take him off IR and make a roster move in order for Pettersson to play in tonight's game.
Yeah, Lekkomäki is here on emergency.
Yeah.
So there would have to be a corresponding move here, and especially because he is on IR.
Interesting note coming from Pierre LeBrun in The Athletic, in one of his latest at The Athletic. He notes that Rick Tocchet, although it is a club option, he will have a say in the option year of his contract. So while it may be thought of as a club option, it really is essentially a mutual option at the end of this season, according to Pierre LeBrun. So that adds a little bit of a wrinkle into the future of Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, and I know LeBrun mentioned he doesn't know what that means necessarily. These are just the facts, right? Like, I would also say that if Rick Tocchet had any hesitation about wanting to continue being here, then I'd imagine even if the club had an option, they would think twice about exercising it. So I think regardless of the contractual situation, the Canucks and Rick Tocchet are going to have to have a discussion after this season. And do we just take one more year or do we sign an extension? Yeah. And up until now, the belief has always been that they're going to work something out and stay here long term. But obviously, it's been a tough year. Obviously, there's a lot going on with this team. And I think waiting till the offseason and seeing how this year develops is going to give us a lot better indication about where the team might be wanting to go, where Rick Tocchet may want to go. And also, like we said, like the future of a lot of key players in this team.
Yeah.
And I think the rest of the season is to determine what direction we take as an organization and how Rick Tocchet himself may see how he fits into that.
You know, I get the worry that, hey, Rick Tocchet is going to have other options, right? He won the Jack Adams last year. He's earned a big enough reputation with his time here in Vancouver that I think other teams would look fondly on Rick Tocchet if he were to become available as a head coach. Obviously, you know how good he is on TV, and that is a far less stressful situation than being an everyday coach in the National Hockey League. Certainly less stressful than being a coach in the National Hockey League in a Canadian market, one that is as big a fishbowl as there possibly is for an NHL team in the Vancouver Canucks. But I would hesitate to say, like, to put those all that together and say, like, that's probably why Rick Tocchet is going to leave at the end of this thing. I don't think anything surprises Rick Tocchet as far as, like, you know, the interest there is in the market on the team, that it's not just progressing smoothly day to day as a head coach, that there is speed bumps along the way that he's going to have to figure out and find solutions for. It's been a lot this year, and reading body language, I think, is dangerous, as people are recently in Rick Tocchet's news conferences, and like, oh, look how upset and how down he looks, and he's not as forthcoming with his answers. And like, yeah, that's the natural progression of an NHL head coach. It happens pretty much everywhere with everybody. I wouldn't use that as ammo to say that Rick Tocchet doesn't want to be the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks beyond this year, as some people see. There seems to be a narrative developing around that front. I don't feel that way, is all I want to say.
Listen, none of us know really what's going through Rick Tocchet's mind. I would say that if he's had to deal with locker room things that are pretty silly when you think about it, and keeping your star players in line and together, does that wear on a guy? Mm. And if the status quo doesn't change, does he think like it's a situation that he can handle and deal with? You know what I mean? So I think a lot of how the rest of the season goes is going to shape the desire, not only by Tocchet, but also by the organization. And I don't think that's a cop-out. I think, and again, like, we can have a lot of opinions. We did to start off this show about whether you think this team can figure it out the rest of the season or not. But there's so much unknown because they haven't been healthy. There's a lot of hockey left to be played. And how does everything come together? And because there is so much unknown, I don't think anyone can give an answer to it. And if it all blows up, then I would imagine we see quite a few changes, you know? And if they have success, then maybe it continues.
Then we're probably singing a much different tune by the end of the season if this thing does flip around. Four Canucks did make it onto the Athletics trade board as well, which was released today by Chris Johnston. Elias Pettersson and JT Miller are 1 and 2 on the trade board. And then further down is Nils Höglander and Vincent Desharnais. Obviously, the focus continues to be on Höglander and Desharnais. I know Rick Dhaliwal had a couple more notes on what exactly is going on with these talks, and mentioned the Eichel return is something the Canucks might be looking for if they were to entertain trading away Elias Pettersson. I mean, this is just kind of, now that it's out there, there's going to be little tidbits that we hear along the way until all of this quiets down, Sat.
We've entered the portion where teams are now being linked.
Yeah.
For a long time, it was just like, these guys might be available. They are available. They are available.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like, oh, actually, you know, the Rangers thing with JT, now you're here in Columbus with Pettersson. And we'll see how this stuff develops over the next little bit. Again, like, I'd be surprised, like, if anything develops quickly here on any of these guys, and especially with Pettersson not being back yet. But I think Columbus is one of those teams that at least has a lot of assets. They have futures. They have guys that can play now. They
recent
have cap
players
space.
They drafted very, very high.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to link a team that has what Vancouver would want, Columbus would be one of those teams.
Yeah.
Right? The question is for Columbus, are they trying to get in here and get a guy at 75 cents on the dollar?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they willing to pay full value? And I don't think the Canucks are moving anybody without their getting full value.
Yeah. And the idea of the Eichel return, I mean, okay, like, yeah, I know what they got. Peyton Krebs obviously hasn't really worked out. But I still feel like Eichel had a broken neck. Elias Pettersson doesn't have that. And while he hasn't played all that well over the last year, I still feel like, you know, the Eichel return would have been more had he not had the injury situation he was going with. And he also had a no-move clause at the time. So I still feel like if you were to trade Pettersson, I'd still want a bigger return than what Vegas or what Buffalo ended up getting for Jack Eichel. Personal opinion. But I guess that's something to debate over time. We're going to have overrated, underrated. I'm sure there's going to be more discussions about what the Canucks are going to do with this situation from your submissions in overrated, underrated, still to come. Get set for adventure. Discovery Channel has moved. All the latest seasons of your Discovery favorites are available on Channel 411 on Rogers Xfinity TV. Overrated, underrated is next on Sportsnet 650.